And you have to bring your cans back to the supermarket and put it in a special kind of machine, and then you get your money back.
Okay, but what happens if I just throw it in the garbage?
Well, then you do not get your money back, or some hobo is robbing your trash.
But
Because it's 25 cents
in
for
either
four.
case,
Eh?
DeFleeks, in either situation, what we're trying to say is you could still store the can or glass in a place other than your work desk. That's all we're saying.
You usually call the recycling bin.
No, I prefer stacking my stuff.
Make it as
I
tall as
think we,
possible. The Leaning
yeah,
Tower
I
of
think
Pisa
we
has
have.
nothing on my desk.
I think we have a light case of a bird hoarder on our hands, Court.
Don't know
Got a
if it's
bird.
hoarding. I don't think it's hoarding quite yet. He does apparently turn them in for money, so.
Definitely. I don't do not want to keep a can of shitty beer, especially if it's empty.
Have you ever taken like two or three, three quarter, four quarter drink bottles of beer and then just mixed them all together into a suicide and drank a bit of that?
What do you mean, the leftovers of alcohol?
Yeah, so you take.
No, that's ugly. That's no.
It's trashy, don't get me wrong. But sometimes you get some surprising flavors out of it.
What is that called? Because there are bars where literally they've got, that rubber mat where people set their drinks down on. And what some people do is take that at the end of the day and they will pour all the liquids that have spilled into there into a glass
Oh God, don't
and
do
have you
that.
drink it.
Don't do that. That's a
I
haze.
won't
That's what
ever
they
do
do to haze new barbacks. Back when you were allowed to haze new barbacks. You're not
What the hell's a
anymore.
bar back?
Someone who collects glasses and drinks and takes orders for patrons of bars.
Interesting. I never knew that person was called a bar back.
They usually also wash dishes in the back as well when they're, have a little bit of downtime.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, Cor, are you ready to have your avian socks knocked off?
Yes. I don't know why, but do it.
For this special episode, just for you, I actually have my beer ready to go.
Just for me? Fleeks, leave the room.
Just Yes, I totally want to lure you to do bad things. I want to show you I know how to do it all right.
By preparing your beer before the show.
Exactly.
Be still, my heart.
Have you been at the toilet too, like a good griffin?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I let myself out and did everything. We are totally
Okay.
prepared.
Because a podcast is like the great outdoors when we go to an auto, as if we would go to an auto trip.
It's
You
like a
have
road
to.
trip. You have to, yeah. Did you trim your fingernails and toenails before the show?
I preened myself last night.
Okay, you pass. So, what are you guys drinking this week?
Like you see in the photo, I'm drinking Meisel and Friends, Stefan's Indian Pale Ale.
Mice
It's
and
just
friends? Wow.
Meisel and Friends. Yeah. And it's Stefan's Indian Ale. Yeah.
Not a fan of pale ales, but kudos to you.
I am drinking a Stella Cider.
Ah, okay. So you're going back to the Stella Artois family.
Oh yeah, good stuff, let me tell you. Really is. I like how this cider has a nice flavor profile, whereas some ciders actually, to me, still taste very, very bitter.
What's awesome about ciders is you never know until you actually try it. So you'll be at the liquor store and you'll be like, "Ooh, this cider looks good." And then you take it home and you'll be like, "Oh, that's bitter and it tastes like bad apples."
Exactly.
Stella.
Like literally, you just hit the nail on the head. No, this Stella actually tastes pretty good. I've had bad Stellas before, but this batch came out very nicely.
Good.
Oh, no complaints there.
I'm not being exciting. I'm just drinking some coffee with a side of orange juice.
Oh.
Yay.
Yay, it's loyal. So exciting.
Yes, it is.
I am so excited.
You clearly can't hide it. So, anything interesting happened to you the past week, Cor?
Why me specifically?
Oh, no, I'm gonna ask Fleeks too. I'm just starting with you.
No, not particularly. Woke up, went to work, went to school, went to bed. That's my life in rotation.
Yeah. I'm in preparation for going to London and stuff, and doing order stuff for the Berdania shirt I'm selling. And I had a very busy week. And yesterday I had to do management for a con. For the Euroference, and then I did a lot of tons of art and design, and yeah, I had a very very full week, full of stuff to do.
Nice.
I have a silly question to ask you, Fleeks. For management for Euroference, the primary language of the management of that con in German, or do they speak English primarily?
The language of the official language of Euroference is English.
Interesting. I figured it would be German.
I had some room management to do and stuff because apparently the Euroference, the hotel who hosted, had some overbooking.
Uh-oh.
And no, that was good for us because of that we could create a 6-person room. Maximum before was 3 persons. That means we get a room cheaper, so we saved money. And to manage that was a bit heavy.
But having 6 people to a room, oh my god!
Yeah, it happens.
I can't even. I would never do that. Like,
okay. The setup of this room, I will room with royalty and my Berlin friends, and it's a family suite. That means it's like 2 rooms in 1 room. You know, it has like a floor at first with a couch and stuff, like a living room, and then 2 bedrooms.
That
means we can, I will room with royalty and her boyfriend, and my other friends will sleep in the other room.
That's a little bit better. I don't know, maybe this is just me. Storm, tell us about your con experiences as well, but I hate sharing rooms with people. Like, it has to be me and my girlfriend, or legitimately, just me.
Oh, it's if you do it with friends.
Oh, Cor, the stories I could tell. I'm sorry, Fleeks. Love you to death. I'm with Cor on this one. I will room with friends if they're like close, good friends that I've known for a while.
Me, not
and
even.
We understand. And we understand how each other's ticks. Aside from that, if I can help it, I'm getting my own damn nest. I'm sorry. Because when I'm done with the con, I'm done with the fucking con. I want to go. I want to shower. I want to sleep. And I want to unwind. And can't do that when you open the door and your roommate is banging half the con or God only knows what else. And you want to just sleep.
Well, I wouldn't want to room with strangers either, but I love having a lot of people in my suites or whatever. And I think that people who take single rooms, they often block. At Euroference, people who take single rooms, they practically block space because every single room is actually a 2-man room. But they get it for them alone, and that's a bit critical. I mean, I understand them if they do not have friends and they don't want to share with strangers. But generally, I would prefer if they would take somebody in their room and make maybe new friends. Who knows?
What upsets me?
New butt friends.
Exactly. It's all about the booty. But what upsets me about how some of the hotels do it, especially abroad, because the idea of a single occupancy hotel room is just amazing to me coming from the U.S. But when I was at Confuzzled in the U.K., They're single occupancy rooms. I got invited to, you know, room parties and stuff there. The bed is so big and the single occupancy room, you could fit three people on it. Whereas the bed in the normal room, you can only fit like 1.5 Americans on. It's insane. We had almost 40 people in one of these single occupancy rooms. So I really wish they would rethink that policy, because you could put at least two butts in one of these rooms.
Yeah, and the thing is they do full-size bed and not queen-size beds in the more traditional places to stay in England. And a full-size bed is much smaller than even a queen.
Yeah.
I've slept on a full-size bed with Drezel when we were both poor bastards just starting out for 2 years and survived just fine. So I think at least the option should be given.
Yeah, but you also have no other choice but to spoon very, very closely that entire 2 years.
You either make it work or somebody gets the floor.
So, this is episode 34 of Bird Life. I'm Core.
I'm Fleek.
And I am the Stormy Grim.
Australia for months. Why are you still calling yourself Stormy?
Because I find it adorable. I'm sorry. Of all the nicknames I've been given, something about Stormy I just find cute.
It's not a phase, Dad.
No, it's not. And I love Australia. I love my Australian friends.
You're going to change your name to Stormy, aren't you? You're going to officially become Stormy Griffin.
I don't know, because then it stopped being a cute nickname and then becomes the real name. And I don't know if it'll still have the cute effect if it's the real name.
Anyways, this episode we are talking about spirituality, like spiritual things and religions and stuff.
Spirituality, like spiritual things and stuff.
Found the atheist. Yeah.
Thank you for that glowing introduction.
I came up with a spontaneous, but everybody knows. I don't know what much to say about spirituality. I mean, Storm defined spirituality for us.
Spirituality, at least to me, pulling a definition out of my ass, would be basically the belief in something beyond yourself.
I think that's pretty much exactly it.
Atheism is actually a belief in itself, because you have to still mentally believe that nothing exists. It's still a belief. It's a belief that believes nothing exists.
It's a system of belief, but it's not a form of spirituality.
No. So, atheism is definitely no spirituality. Yeah. That's the opposite of spiritualism.
But, I mean, we all have beliefs. I believe that this mug full of coffee is very physical and real, like I can drink out of it. So it is, I believe this is coffee, therefore I have a system of beliefs.
So I have a question for you both then. Going by that logic, is Scientology a spiritual belief system?
Obviously, yes, but it's a stupid belief system.
Yeah, it's... So have you read the history of Scientology?
I actually have done quite a decent amount of research on Scientology, and I have got some opinions on it. The biggest one in that I think it's more about control than it is about providing true spiritual peace. Then again, some would argue modern Christianity and whatnot, depending on what particular flavor of the Kool-Aid you drink.
Well, L. Ron Hubbard, when he created Scientology, he created it just out of the... he created it literally just because he could. I can't remember the exact quote, but he said something like, I'm going to create a religion, and I'm going to make it absurd, just to see how many people I can get to follow me. And then it spiraled into what it is from there, into this power, the system of power and control.
Let's be honest, Core, and then Tom Cruise showed up.
No.
Yeah.
So, no. There's a whole other thing with Tom Cruise that I kind of believe happened there. But L. Ron Hubbard, he created this system of beliefs to debunk all other religions and mm-hmm. decredit them. And then from there it turned into what it is, you know, this very invasive system that has its hands in our government, it has its hands in our population, and it's just gathering money and just amassing power. With Tom Cruise and many other celebrities, so you're well aware of the fact that Scientology is quite well known for extorting people.
Yes.
Yes, of course.
Pretty much blackmail at some case.
Maybe Tom Cruise is a, you know, bona fide Scientologist. Maybe he does partake in that. But with him and many other celebrity Scientologists, I just have this feeling that Scientology got some dirt on them, extorted them to join into their population so that whatever dirt they had doesn't get leaked out, and is using their celebrity fame as a form of advertisement and influence to get more people to join and gather more money.
Or they give him money. But the true question... Wait. the only thing I can think of when I think of Scientology is that they are eating the placenta.
Yeah,
I think that's just a very New Agey thing. I don't think that's Scientology. Yeah.
But that's something Scientology does it for some reason, and it's one of the first things that comes to my mind when I think of Scientology. And then
one of the first things that should come to your mind when you think of Scientology is rehabilitation centers. Roughly 50% of the rehabilitation centers across the U.S. are in one form or another possessed by the Church of Scientology, whether directly or indirectly.
And that, Core, is a great way to kind of lead into my point by bringing up Scientology. And that is that to discuss beliefs, to discuss spirituality, and to an extent, some people lump spirituality with religion. What you have to understand is there's a difference between the actual spiritual side of it, which is what you believe about yourself, about your creator, or about your kin, etc., and the business side of it, which is sort of, you know, the churches, the books, the public speaking, the Scientology centers, all that good stuff. Because each person's going to have their own belief. Each person's going to choose whether or not to follow the Bible to a T, or they're to follow the teachings of the Church of Scientology to a T. And some people are going to just kind of cherry pick, and some people are going to choose to make money on it. And it is what you make of it. It truly is.
Money is a massive form of power and a huge influence. And if you can get people to just give you money for your cause, that's where the corruption comes in.
And I think, and this may be maybe a little less popular of a stance, but if you look at history, it's very well backed up. Belief, spirituality, and the concept of religion has been used to control populations for a long time.
Christianity, Catholicism, the LDS Church, and Scientology. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, of course. I mean, now, the Pope had, influence.
Let me just put this out there before we get too deep in here. We're not bashing on religion. We are kind of picking apart organized religion and, you know, structured religion in the fact that many of the bigger it gets, the more it takes advantage of its congregation.
Yes, I completely agree with Core on that.
But as far as a system of beliefs goes, if you consider yourself Christian, if you consider yourself Wiccan, if you consider yourself atheist, do what is right by you.
Yeah, as long as you do not hurt anyone with it, that's important.
Exactly, Fleeks. Exactly.
I also wanted to say that as far as the Scientologists' rehabilitation centers go, the ones inspired by L. Ron Hubbard, that's not a good thing. I'm not, so they're oftentimes government sponsored, but they were extorted into gaining government grants and sponsorship. But it's not a good thing that there is so many of these centers owned by the Church of Scientology, because they instill their power and influence on the people who are in dire need of help. And they take advantage of these people. So, you know, if you have a friend who's going to a detox center, maybe figure out which one you're sending them to.
Well,
yeah.
And that's a good point, Cor, though I will back it up a little and put this message out there, in that if you go to a recovery center or join a community church, etc., and you found that it brings happiness to your life, it brings you a sense of purpose, it helps you get through a tough time, we're not bashing that at all. If anything, I encourage you, follow through. Don't let anyone talk you out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Come to your own conclusions.
But also beware of L. Ron Hubbard, just saying.
Yes, and you know, the Scientology example is sort of a good example to start off with, because you can get that in Christianity, you can get that in Muslim, you can get that in pretty much all flavors of religion. But what I wanted to focus on this episode is the non-business side of it, which is spirituality. So by starting off with the business side of it, we can kind of walk away and go more towards the spiritual side.
Bye-bye.
Which is
nice talking. See you. Bye.
Which is what do you believe into your core and why? And for each person, that is a unique question. So I'll start with us, since obviously you two are my best friends. And I'll start with you, Fleeks. And I have a simple question for you. There is no right or wrong answer to this. And that is that, what do you believe causes you to push yourself? You know, wake up in the morning, complete your art projects, meet friends, etc. What pushes you? What drives you to keep going?
You already answered my question with, yeah, friends, my projects, creativity, stuff like that, and science, and my beliefs, of course, because, but I do not really have any spiritual beliefs. I have more like beliefs on my, I have a very ethical thinking, and my credo is practically that you should try to make the world somehow like a better place, and respect your you should try to contribute to make the world a better place, and you should meet everyone with respect, and try to make, one of the most important things is, don't be egoistic, try to make others happy too, you know. Don't put your own well-being too much in the foreground, but maybe try to depend your own well-being on the well-being of others, you know. Try to get happiness from the well-being of others, you know.
What's interesting, Fleeks, is, have you ever heard of the belief system called secular humanists?
Really, no.
I'm familiar with the term, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm familiar with humanistic, and actually, like, I had a lot of psychology classes in my past life, and the humanistic theories, because psychology has, like, a lot of different cases of, a lot of angles to look at psychology, and one of them is humanistic, then you have behavioristic and stuff. I don't want to go too deep into it, but the humanistic viewpoints always were kind of my favorite, because they were like very intuitive, very, the critique on it is it's sometimes not very not very scientific. I'd be careful with that because it is indeed scientific in some way. But the critic is that it sometimes seems a bit like more like a religion or something. But yeah, that's my humanistic is pretty great.
Well, I bring that up because a couple years ago, the Society of Secular Humanists ran a ad campaign around Christmas that said, "Be good for goodness sake." And basically what you were describing, at least a lot of the aspects you were describing about treating others and beliefs in science, et cetera, is sort of lines up with that belief system.
Okay, so my system of beliefs falls very much in line with Leek's. So my motivations in life are very much so driven by my family, my friends, and my will to be good for them and be good for myself. And I don't believe that that is in any way limited to this transhumanism or, I'm sorry, secular humanism. It's a very widespread concept of just, you know, be good to other humans because, you know, be good to others because it's just the right thing to do. So really quickly, y'all are where I live in Utah, and here in Utah we have a very vast population of Mormons. Frequently, I bash on the religion on this podcast, so there is a lot of good that comes from the LDS Church. They are like the yin to Scientology's yang, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't like how invasive they are. I don't like how they inject their system of beliefs into the local government and make everybody follow their system of beliefs, whether they're LDS or not. But I do have a lot of admiration for their business practices and how they teach, you know, not just the LDS, but the population around them, how to run businesses, how to be a good human, how to help others and not even have religion as an influential part of it, but just being good to others. One book you guys may have heard of is Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Yes? No?
Yeah, I heard about that. But only heard. Not really sure what it is.
It's written by Stephen Covey, and it's... I like to think it's kind of an amalgamation of many self-help psychiatric books. Probably one of its biggest inspirations is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. But Stephen Covey himself has a lot to offer in this book as far as how to make yourself better, how to be a better person for the sake of those around you. Because one of the core concepts is dependence, independence, and then interdependence. And that's the belief of you start out life dependent. You need your parents, you need your family, you need your friends to help take care of you. And then at some point, you establish independence. You are able to sustain for yourself, you are able to take care of yourself. But then there's a step further, and that's interdependence. That is where you reach a point in life, and hopefully we all reach this point, but most of us, many of us don't. But we reach this point of interdependence where we are able to take care of ourselves so well that we can take care of those around us, our flock, as it were, and be able to help them if it's just financially, if, you know, get a roof over their head, provide them moral support, just any way that you can define help, you are able to extend that olive branch and help others around you. And that's kind of how I believe.
Are you ever truly independent?
No, you go through phases, so you're always going to have some level of dependence on something.
I think...
Be it, you know, a system of government, even?
For example, my... you know, I'm doing creative work and trying to fulfill my dream about designing shirts and collaborate with others to get them to publish the shirts and stuff. I'm about to do a company, and I'm very much dependent on the support of others, and I get the support even. I mean, I have a lot of nice people supporting me, even paying the a bit more expensive price for my product, because I'm only small. I can't afford like producing a shirt for 12 euro, like a big company and stuff. But the people do it, and they even give me tips and stuff. And that somehow proves a bit. That somehow proves a bit that there are a lot of people who have this phase where they are starting to help others who depend on them, if that makes sense.
It is in our nature to want to help others, even if they are not necessarily in dire need of, like, you know, help. Like, they're not, you know, they're not reaching out, they're not, you know, hands out, you know, asking for gimmies, but we still want to help them because they're our friends and we care about them, or they've done something really cool for those we care about, that kind of thing.
And to add, just short to end, thank you guys. You know who you are, so thank you guys. Storm.
Okay, but you know, Fleeks, you bring up a very, very valid point, as do you, Core. But I'm going to touch on what you said, Fleeks, about wanting. It's in our nature to want to help others. Think about
that. Depends on the person.
We are born a blank slate. All of what you are describing is a learned behavior. So would that not be, therefore, a cultural, a society-based behavior that you learn from your parents, you learn from your environment growing up, that being a good person means you do this, you help your friends, you help, you know, the old lady cross the street when you see her struggling with the groceries? Is that not something you learn from society rather than a belief system?
So there's been a lot of research on this very subject. Is our ability to love and want to help others an inherent trait that is just part of our core, or is it something that is learned? I believe personally that we do love inherently, and it's not a learned trait.
Okay.
And there's quite a bit of research to back that.
There is. Do you know the Lawrence Kohlberg's stage of moral development?
Maybe if you recited a bit of it.
Yeah, that it's practically about a theory about a
psychological.
A psychological model of the human moral development, and I don't want to quote the whole thing because it's like six stages. The main point I wanted to say is that stage five and especially stage six is only be like reached by about, I think it, I'm not entirely sure, judge me for it, but it's about 20% of humans reach the sixth stage, because that's like moral, that their moral reasoning is more or less based on abstract reasoning, and they are using universal ethical principles, and for them are laws like only valid.
Okay, I think
they are grounded in justice. And
I think
I'm
familiar
justice.
With this, what you're talking about. So the stages of development are, it kind of starts with the bottom tier where you have to meet your basic necessities, shelter, food, water, that right. kind of thing. And then it scales up from there to a system of leadership.
Kinda.
Almost, right?
No, that's another theory. That's more a theory of, how's it called in English? Give me a second. That's the ranking of needs, requirements.
Okay.
What you were talking about.
Maybe I just thought those were in line. Okay.
Well, the thing is, okay, yes. You do have to meet certain needs. Obviously, you got to feed yourself, house yourself, etc., to make sure that you're taken care of. But if you have a child born in a properly structured society, they're going to behave vastly different than a child that's born into a world of chaos, or
a wild child versus a wild child versus, like, you know, upper class child kind of thing, you know.
So therefore, separating, you know, now that my point by bringing this up is you've got, okay, you've got established behaviors you learn because of your surroundings, your society, etc. And then you've got your spirituality and how it affects your behaviors. Well, and one of the things that people like to bring up all the time when I have discussions with them, especially Christians, are the effect of the, you know, Ten Commandments on our society and how that created a better world with which to live in.
Well, before we delve into Ten Commandments, why don't we take a step even further back? Let's take a look at it evolutionary. So we, as humans, are primates. And primates are a very social system. We require others around us to help us and care for us when we're young. We're not like sharks. We're not born swimming and ready to just, you know, eat everything. We have a family unit. And, you know, children who are deprived of a family unit, you know, from birth, you know, if they make it, if they are fortunate enough to continue to be able to grow growing up, they forge a family unit. It's kind of like the same thing with, you know, the child who was raised by wolves kind of story, you know? We are a dependent and interdependent species, biologically.
Yes, I am familiar with that concept, and certain primal things, yes, you will always have a social aspect. I do believe that.
It's not just a social aspect, it's the aspect where we get cared for, and then we care for.
Kind of like why people, when they go to prison, why even the most hardened criminals are more inclined to join a gang for protection and also for the support being in a gang provides emotionally.
We need that kind of structure. We, right. To our core, we require it.
Right.
But I thought a bit more about the question from Storm before and what our beliefs is. And I'm wondering if you had to put yourself to some kind of heismus, you know, like heismus, like
test.
Right. What would be your thing to put you in? Like, for me, if I could identify with any religion, it's not really a religion, but any belief system, for me it would be like Einstein had, you know. He was more or less into the pantheism. Do you know that? It's like, it's more like a philosophical thing of a belief system. And it's also like that if there is a God, it's not really a person, but it's like the whole nature and the planet, the universe and stuff.
So Gaia kind of thing.
So are you talking about the concept where we are God, in the sense that it exists within
more or less,
each person?
Yeah, everything we philosophically like considering as good that helps people sorry, I've lost the string here a bit.
It's okay.
Like a good thing is like if nature and all the physical laws and stuff are like the God, then it's our duty to preserve nature, to be responsible with physics and all the stuff we are learning from our own world and from the universe and stuff, like the physical laws and stuff. And it's a very kind of scientific part of belief. And pantheism is also, you know, pan is like taking from everything. Like if you look at religions philosophically, I hope that's the right right
objectively
adver-
maybe you think objectively,
no,
like
yeah,
take, like
I mean,
taking
like,
a
like,
step
like,
back and analyzing it versus, you know,
yeah, and then like taking the good parts from a religion, try to interpret them for yourself, and if you say like, hey, I can live with the Islamic thing that says, don't kill other religion people as long as they don't force you to take their beliefs, like it in the Quran or stuff, or from the Bible, you're taking like that guy who that Samaritan. I don't know if
Samaritan's the good Samaritan.
Yeah. Like if you take that for you and like, oh, I can understand that picture. I can understand what the religion wants to say with that. Then, yeah, that's something you can take for yourself because you're a pantheist.
You see, you know? Okay, so I know, I totally get that. And I think that's interesting. So I'll just straight up admit, I'm a Christian. I don't follow any denomination, but I consider myself a Christian and a practicing one at that. But I have done a lot of studies of various religions across the world. And there is one that really struck a chord with me. Maybe you've heard of it. It's called Gnosticism. Sound familiar?
No, nope. Not at all.
Not at all.
Why don't you...
Monism. Monism or...
No, Gnosticism. So here's what Gnosticism is. I'm going to give just one brief little overview of it. So there is a dyad, and her name is Sophia. And she lives among the ether with the other dyads. But she questions who created the dyads. Okay. And the dyads are these creatures of immense power, basically. Essentially gods. But she wants to know who created them. And in her frustration, she accidentally gave birth to a child. And she panicked. She threw this child out of the ether into the void. So this child grew up knowing nothing, knowing nobody, just this vast emptiness. So from this vast emptiness, he started to take pieces and bits of himself and build things. And he built the sun and the earth and the stars and, you know, everything around us. And then he created Earth, and he created this garden on Earth, and he started creating all the creatures on Earth. And Sophia looked down from the ether one day and saw from where there was once nothing, all of this stuff all of a sudden, and she panicked. So she flew down into we'll just say it's the Garden of Eden. She flew down into Eden and was looking at all these creatures that her creation had created. And she was looking over all of it, and she met Adam and Eve. And from that, she tried to tell Adam and Eve, because they were creatures of sentience versus the rest of, you know, the animals. She tried to explain to them that because they were created from this other Deed, this Yahweh, God, that they have a spark of divinity in them, that they have the ability to achieve so much more potential, but because Yahweh is so inexperienced and he doesn't know how to control it, he can't teach them how to use this spark of divinity that is in them. And frankly, I thought that was, I think that's really beautiful. And I think that there is an element of divinity in each and every, you know, living creature. So it kind of falls in line with the whole one God concept, with the everybody is God concept. It definitely is a different spin on Christianity. But that's something that I've kind of adopted into my life, is that, you know, we all have this potential to be something so great. We're essentially gods ourselves, you know?
Right. But now here's where it gets interesting, because you've talked about that, and, you know, we're currently kind of touching on belief structures at the moment.
Right.
And it is beautiful what you just mentioned. Now here, let's talk about something related, but not quite the same. When you're talking about belief structures at the moment, we're talking about, okay, religion or things of that nature and how it influences us or why we do what we do. What do you think when it comes to spirituality of actual spirits? Do you think it's hocus pocus? Do you believe there's truth in it?
I believe we have spirits.
Me personally. I don't really believe of spirits itself, but I think they're like a symbol, you know, like, yeah, a symbol, like a conscience, you know.
Your consciousness?
Consciousness, thank you. Consciousness. I think the spirits are like our consciousness, and they have a very symbolic, philosophical symbolism. Sorry, that was doubled. Yeah, so, no, yeah.
The most fun way to describe, like, the way I kind of believe we have a spirit is, you know, we're this computer, we're this physical object. You know, we store, we process data, da-da-da-da-da. And through this, we have our consciousness, our soul, our form of being. Now, when a computer dies, you can still take the data off of it and move it somewhere else. That's kind of how I equivocate the soul. Like, when our body dies, you know, the data will still kind of be there, but I guess in some weird ethereal sort of way, I hope, like, you know, God takes that data and plucks it up into heaven. So that's just, that's kind of like how, like, you know, our consciousness continues to move forward in that way.
I think okay. more Ooh, that our heaven consciousness...
Heaven is the cloud. It's the backup system.
Oh, jeez.
I wanted to say, I think that consciousness... It's only a short, sorry, Storm. The consciousness lives further in the memories of other people. So that's why people... want to leave some footprint on Earth, like Einstein did, or some very prominent kings and stuff, and that's that we have the urge to live further in the memories of people.
Because until so, we as humans are able to actually back up a consciousness on our own as well, so that we can, you know, access that at any time, kind of like the game Soma talks about, like, it'd be really cool to be able to back up everything you know in your brain. And we could have this giant cloud, you know, congregation of everything we've ever learned. That's
well. Go ahead. I view it a little differently. I view it naturally being I'm other kin myself. I view the human body as sort of a host, or if you want to use the term vessel, that's fine as well. And then you have the spirits that can choose to dock and reside within you. Some people are blessed enough to be able to house more than one spirit. Some people can actually have their spirit die. That's my belief on that. That kind of, if you take it a step further, when a human being you or loved one you know dies, especially if they lived a good life, it's just their host dying. It's not the spirit. The spirit can most definitely live on. In my belief, it can be reincarnated into a different creature or perhaps another human being in the future. If you want to believe that when someone dies, they go to a place called heaven, that's wonderful too.
The backup server.
Exactly. You know, the nation.
The cloud.
humanity's backup server. It's a wonderful thing, right? What's fascinating when it comes to people, whether you're kin, whether you're Christian, etc., people that believe they can talk to spirits or have a spirit or feel empathy towards spirits, they all tend to really either be number one, full of shit, or number two, they they actually have taken the time to really learn how their body ticks, to study and to try and be at harmony with themselves and with the nature and with their natural surroundings around them. Because in order to cross planes, you need to be able to channel energy. And that is really how many kin end up finding and bonding with their spirits and being able to recall memories. When it comes to people from other religions, that's also how, if you get someone that is talking to you, that is claimed to see, or, you know, a loved one from your past, et cetera, that said, brought along this message or that message,
And you may think I'm full of shit, and that's totally fine, but I'm rolling with it. That's also how that concept would work.
So, yeah, there's some interesting mixed concepts there. Like, so you need energy in order to cross the ethereal plane. You need a coin to pay for your ride across the River Styx.
I've got some questions from people in general since the last podcast where we talked about spirituality.
So before we delved into questions, I did want to just kind of maybe turn a minute over to you, Storm, to kind of talk about Therianism in general. Like, so you kind of explained some elements of it, but if you had to give someone like the, you know, introductory class to Therianism 101, what would your introduction statement about it be?
To understand Therianism or Otherkinism, you have to understand aspects of paganism or Wiccan. You have to understand how energies flow. You have to understand how to connect with the earth, how to connect with the environment around you, how to respect the earth and the environment around you. And you have to understand how to balance yourself out in order to prepare your mind and your third eye to channel and see things and feel things. Once you've done that, only then can you truly allow yourself to become a vessel or a host, as I like to say most of the time. And if you are an otherkin and you have a spirit inside you, that is when you'll start to see more than you ever have seen before of said spirit or spirits. The world is full of spirits, of human, dragon, griffin, avian, you name it. It's very interesting. The more you dive into this, how much you'll see and how much you wish you didn't see. So study carefully. Going by cemeteries, it can get a little disturbing to see people that have passed away, especially if they've died of very gory accidents. But for me, because of how I've researched, I mostly see spirits in the form of orbs with different colors to them. When I focus intensely, I can actually go ahead and start to make out what they are, but I haven't gone much further than that because I have met others that have gone deep into this. And once you go past a certain point, it's sort of like the point of no return. You can't flip the switch off. And so no matter where you are, no matter where you're walking in life, no matter what you're doing, you're always seeing everything all at once, including the stuff you don't want to see. Whereas right now, unless I focus on it and actually get myself into that mental state, I can function quite fine in normal society and not really get bothered too much. I'll sense the presence of other things, but I won't actually see them with intricate detail unless I focus on those things.
Very shared with many other Wiccans that I've known. One aspect of it is so you talk about becoming a host vessel to a spirit. Now, one thing that I've learned kind of in my studies as far as, you know, paganism goes is most people within Wicca very much so look down upon allowing other spirits to enter your body, your vessel. It is to their belief that it is to the common belief, as far as I understand, that your body harbors your soul, and to open it up compromises and puts your soul at risk. And then there are even your soul is also a force of protection, because if your soul is not in your body, then another spirit can overtake it. And that's how you get possessions. And that is how you have demons take over. Astral projection, for one instance, is where you leave your body behind, but you also leave it incredibly exposed where it can be taken over by a bad spirit. So where does it come along that in the greater aspect of things, they say, don't let spirits in your body?
Well,
and then in your aspect, it's let a spirit in your body, maybe even let multiple in if you can handle it.
Great question. Here's my answer to that. let me use the example of Storm. When I was young, just born, according to my belief system, Storm saw something in me, and when I was just a baby, our spirits bonded at that point. It was only when I was old enough to realize what was going on that I had my awakening, and then I realized that I was more than just a regular person. However, what your research, what your friends, etc., have told you about paganism, about the risks of exposing yourself to other spirits, that's all true. You absolutely can be attacked. You can let in spirits that will literally take possession of you and hijack the living shit out of you, and you'll end up becoming a different person than you were before. You know, you're not quite going to turn into the Hollywood demon possessed, I will kill everyone type. No, that's not what happens, but it definitely eats away at the inside. I've been attacked before. I know how that feels. I know how it feels to be hunted. And just as there is good, there is evil. Life is about a balance. And in the spiritual world, there is a balance as well. And everything you do in one direction has an equal and opposite reaction in the other. So you have to balance out your energy, and you have to balance out your actions very carefully. Don't go mucking around with things that you're not entirely sure of. Always ask for help or do your research and baby step your way into things. And what I did to kind of help me was I spent the overwhelming majority of my time researching and just bonding with Storm, who I believe, once again, was with me since birth. So I'm not letting in any new spirits. It's just I'm discovering the spirit that was really within me the entire time. And Storm is also my guardian spirit, so he helps keep away a lot of the garbage that you risk dealing with when you overly expose yourself to the spiritual world.
He's your Patronus.
That's an interesting word I haven't used in a long time.
Not to make light of everything you just said. It just kind of stuck out to me.
Yeah.
All right. We are at an hour in at this point. Do we want to move on to the questions?
I would like to do a little thing
before
we go to the question. Not a game, not really a game, but...
Can I have a bonding moment with you here just for a moment? So,
sure.
Do you remember back when I would always do the Bug Burger Bluff? And yes. You would express so much resentment?
Yes.
I understand your emotions.
But no, this time we do not have to.
I love you,
Carl. This time we don't have to do anything cringy, but because of I researched a bit about spiritualism, and I somehow came across a dream interpretation site. Because dream interpretation is practically one of the things that's very deeply connected to spiritualism. A lot of people get like gas from their dreams for their own spiritualism, if I can express it like that. And the first thing I did was searching for our bird species.
Okay.
And what do you guess? And that's the question. What do you guess does a woodpecker symbolize to start with my soda?
Honestly?
Yeah,
if you came to me with asking me this question seriously.
Yeah, I asked you.
I would say it's a double-edged sword. Woodpeckers are a beautiful bird. They symbolize a great deal of strength and determination, but they also can symbolize a great deal of destruction. It really depends on what aspect your life is headed as to whether this is a positive thing or a negative thing. So I'd end up asking you follow-up questions as to what's going on with your background at that time. But since this is Birdania and, you know, fuck yeah, birds are great, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, stick to the positives in that your determination and your perseverance to overcome any challenge laying in front of you is what that dream is trying to symbolize.
Okay, Core, do you want to add something to that, or can I read the meaning I found in the
Okay,
internet?
So I'll just say, if I remember right, birds usually have a lot to do with family units in dreams. So I think it has something to do with building a family or stability kind of thing.
Okay, the website I found said that to see a woodpecker in your dreams indicates that there is like something in your waking life which you have overlooked, and it also symbolizes industry and diligence.
Jesus Christ, I'm pretty sure I read that in a fortune cookie once.
Well, the thing about Fleeks, in all honesty, the thing about dream interpretations is they're kind of like assholes. Everyone has one.
Yeah.
So it's all about how well the person knows you.
I just say what I read. I mean, there are different dream interpretation websites.
Yeah,
I found
one
that was especially
Eastern, so there's a lot of Eastern type of dream interpretation. There's a lot of Native American dream interpretation.
Yeah.
And if I remember right, the Spanish had a lot to do with dream interpretation as well.
Or the Germans with Freud, for example.
Oh.
Freud did a lot of dream interpretation.
I don't like
but
Freud.
Yeah.
I really don't like Freud.
Oh, he's funny. He's a bit. He did say things that are not okay, but generally.
He's the Pliny the Elder of our generation. He's just slowly. He seemed right at the time, and we just kind of went, yeah, I guess that sounds about right. And as we go on, we're just like, no, you're wrong. No, that's wrong. Okay, maybe that has some credibility to it, but the rest of it's wrong.
He's still a huge influence on psychology, believe me.
Yeah.
Because he found out some things that could... Yeah, I don't want to dive too deep into it, but he found out a few things that are still kind of valid. And they worked with it and improved his theories. Of course, we don't say anymore that females are psychologically sick from birth. So no, that's not a thing anymore.
Wow.
That's what Freud said, and I disagree with that, of course. But to come to the next one, of course, I also searched for Raven. What do you think did that webpage say? A few webpages I compared a few dream interpretation websites. What do you think Raven says?
Intelligence, Raven. Beauty, majesty. no. So for ravens, it's usually something along the lines of, you know, morbidity, death, bad fortune, misfortune, frequently following the death of a child. We're not a good...
Okay.
We're not something you want to dream about.
For me, ravens would either be taken as a warning or severe trust issues. You don't really trust a raven. They're sort of a symbol of darkness.
Hey, you're pretty close to what the website says, that because it says that to see a raven in your dream symbolizes stuff like betrayal, disharmony, misfortune, and death. Yeah. And the death may be more some kind of a symbolic death, and that it signals an end to inhabit or face in your life that could be positive or negative, who knows. Alternatively, the dream suggests that someone is taking advantage of your misfortune.
Well, that sums up Core pretty well. I'm sorry.
No, I see Core is actually one of the reasons of my fortune. Yeah.
I'll take the joke. I'll take the joke. If I ever cause somebody misfortune, it is not intentional. If I wrong you in some way, please call me out and say, dude, like, what the fuck did you do? And I'll make it right.
So, audience, I can have the privilege of saying I've been friends with this weird beaky purple bastard now for a few years, and he has caused me many moments of joy and caused me to shed a few tears, and he's a wonderful friend. I wouldn't have it any other way. So that's a very accurate fortune, but no, really, couldn't ask for a finer raven.
Yeah, he's a fine raven.
So let's find out what griffins mean in dreams.
Yeah, what do griffins mean in dreams? storms. Let's start with you. What do you think your griffin means?
Griffins are usually interpreted as either a form of a guardian, like they're protecting you from something, or they can actually be mischievous. So it really depends on what context you see them.
I definitely see the guardianism, but I also want to think like fortune, like you're about to, very fortune cookie, like you will encounter great wealth soon sort of thing.
the thing is, actually, they are standing, I can only really read positive things, and it says like on that website I was, like, the general thing they say is to see a griffin in your dream symbolizes the positive aspect of change, for example. That means you possess like the physical power and stability of the lion and the vision, spirit and alertness of the eagle. And it also represents intellect, physical strength, and the sun.
Fuck yeah, baby. That sums me up right here.
There is also one aspect that he's leaving out. I found the website he's on right now. So one thing it says about griffins, if you dream about them, it's also hinting that you need to take a bath.
Fuck you.
Also, I don't know if the sun is the best symbolism because the sun is pretty hot. And
well, you know, when you look at me,
it burns a lot of stuff.
When you look at me, your eyes will burn from the sight of my sexiness. So, I mean, that is pretty accurate.
Or the scent of your cat butt.
The scent of my cat butt. Yes, remember, I have just as many people humping after me as they do running away.
I'm pretty sure whoever wrote the site was a griffin, and because to bring our one of our patrons in the spotlight a bit, I also looked up how do they pronounce Hoopoe? Whatever wreck it is.
Hoopo,
because he was our first. I thought of him for some reason, and because he was one of our first. Or if not even the first Patreon, I looked up for him too. And what do you think Hoopoe does symbolize?
That you need deodorant. I love nice. You so much, guy. I really, it's nothing personal. It really isn't. I know the Patreon in question, and they're the most wonderful bird I've ever met, really, truly, but still, I had to do it.
yeah. Well, what do you think, Cor?
I don't know, because Hoopoes, they're kind of, if I remember right, they're kind of Middle Eastern in nature.
Okay.
And I don't know what they would interpret them as. I would want to think some sort of like fortune as well.
actually, gold. Okay. Because we're deep in now, I will start to give you the answer that the webpage said, at least. To see a hoopoe in your dreams signifies betrayal. Someone Ooh. Is, like, working against you. Alternatively, the dream represents filial responsibility and devotion. So...
Ouch.
Hmm.
Ouch. Yeah.
Look, compared to shit, I'd rather... You know, be told that I need to put on more deodorant than that. Ooh. Okay.
All right. Shall we move on to the questions?
We can do that. Yes, we are ready.
Okay.
Thank you, Wicked Witch of the West.
First question comes from Drizzle Silverwing. The question is, can Cor microwave a burrito so hot Storm himself could not eat it?
We could put it on fire because I know for a fact that fire is a griffin's weakness.
So there's a couple... How do I come into play in this? Because it's the microwave doing the work. I mean, if I really wanted to ruin Storm's burrito, I would just enter like 99 minutes or something into the microwave and just let the microwave burn the burrito so bad that it reduces to its original carbonic form and returns to nature. And it's just a plate of ash when he pulls it out.
And you would also ruin your kitchen.
I'd be so angry.
And that would effectively ruin his burrito.
Yeah, but he theoretically could still eat it.
It's true. You could just eat a plate full of charcoal, carbon.
Why not? I heard that charcoal is very much... Actually, to come back to your scientific study, is actually charcoal is good against poison and stuff. You know those charcoal pills? So
there's a difference between normal charcoal and... Don't just go and eat a brick of charcoal, please. That's not
the Actually, when you burn food, there's a lot of active charcoal in it. So the active charcoal, the benefits of the active charcoal...
It absorbs and binds with alcohol and a few, but not many other toxins that are in your digestive system.
But they also, they tackle the cancerous parts of the, sorry, you brought me out of that, the cancerous substances that you have in a burnt food. So that's a thing, really. You can eat burnt food, and you will be totally fine and not risking cancer, according to scientists.
Well, because... okay, in that case, we should all just eat carbon exclusively.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Burn out all the vitamins and nutrients.
Make sure you charcoal every piece of meat you ever touch. Janos Acosta asks, what's the strangest moment you've had with a spiritual person?
So I need to download from my memory. Give me a second.
Well, I've got one. I was working for DirecTV repairing satellite systems, and a pastor asked me out to dinner after I finished their TV service. A male pastor that had anti-gay propaganda hanging on his wall.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Maybe he just wanted to eat with you without any sexual stuff.
I had the feeling he was in the closet. I had a feeling he was in the closet.
So I used to work at a call center, and it was a booking agency. And I managed to get this one woman to a place where she was trying to go to because of like a family medical emergency kind of thing, and I actually managed to book her there, which was unfortunately more rare than they would care to admit. But after I got her booked there, she asked me to pray with her, and that was really awkward. And this is coming from someone who admitted a few minutes ago that he's a Christian. Don't do that. Please don't. It's weird. Don't make me pray with you.
The strangest thing I regularly see are those people on the street that are screaming at you like, hey, you're all sinners, and do you know this Christian or how are they called,
soapbox preachers,
those Jehovah's how are they called, Jehovah's Witnesses, that's standing in the town and screaming at you, that are screaming to you about Jesus and how you're all sinners. And if you have long hair, and if you have long hair, they're especially fixated on you, like, oh yeah, metal music is the music of Satan. You're giving your ears to Satan, ears that God gave you and stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, cool.
How is your sales ability in order, like, how effective of a recruitment process do you think they have for, you know, to go out and shout at people for doing things that are wrong in their own specific beliefs and calling them bad things for it? How effective is your propaganda?
They get the fringe element. They do. And another weird thing I just had... happened yesterday was one of my customers posted on their Facebook page that God decreed that the only position you can have sex in is with the woman on bottom, man on top, and anything else comes from Satan and you're going to hell.
Shout out to Storm's customer. Hey. If you're listening,
shout out to Drezel. You're going to hell.
Well, we already knew that anyway.
So, next question comes from the beautiful, the glorious Feedy. And the question is, are you spiritual? Do you have something with spiritual energies or things? Well, Feedy, if you listen to this podcast, I'm sure you've drawn your own conclusion by now.
No, okay, whatsoever. Okay. Nope, not happening.
But I would like to go ahead and decree that, no, I'm not spiritual at all. I am just, you know, some guy that likes to preach bullshit, and I'm just along for the ride. You know, they pay me very well to be here.
I'm secretly L. Ron Hubbard.
And I believe in science and nature.
See, I thought
good things. Being good to each other.
Fleeks, we were being bullshit. I thought you believe in ham.
No, that was Cranus.
Jeez. Speaking of ham, Gadget Luminox states we were looking for more ham.
Okay.
Okay, Gadget.
Go to the supermarket.
I'll make sure, you know, I will send you a link to your nearest supermarket so you can find all the ham you're looking for. Not sure why you sent that to us, but God bless. Okay.
Gadget, I will hook you up, okay? Like, if we meet at a con, like, say hi, and, like, the next time you'll see me at that con, I'll have a ham sandwich for you. It's all good, buddy.
More questions. I want more questions. I'm addicted to questions. Yeah, and I'm addicted to questions. One more at least.
Right,
or two
right.
more.
We can do two more. We can do there. We can do three more. All right, as long as they're quick. Here's the question from Maury. Question is, do bees qualify as birds for the purposes of entry into bird crew?
No.
The answer is fuck no. Love bees, love my honey. They stay the fuck out of Birdania. No. If it goes bzzz, it's not a bird.
One more.
Fucking God. Okay, from... what the hell? How did you...
What was that?
Pasta.
Sorry. That sound. What?
I just forgot how to pronounce his name again. I'm so sorry, dude.
Okay.
Question is, when is Storm actually going to sing the complete Birdanian anthem?
When are you doing that, Storm? That's only you can answer that.
Well, the answer is as some of you know, I've been collecting Birdanian National Anthem clips from various birds, and I'm going to be recording my own and including it as part of that collection, so you will be hearing it soon.
A satisfactory answer. It's not live, but I'll take it.
I heard at least one, and... Wow, people, you got creative with that. Kudos to you.
I love our fans. Please keep the craziness coming. We do this for you.
Okay, one more.
Okay.
Only one more.
All right, this is the last question. This is the last question, okay. And the question is, why were you so late today?
I was outside detailing my car.
I was very busy, like I said before.
I was busy... And I'd like to remind you, my good fellow Birdanian brother, that a griffin is never late. He always arrives exactly at the
You're
moment.
You're not a wizard.
And that is, since I'm a griffin, God damn it, I can say any fucking thing I want to say, and that is what it is.
He's not a wizard. Don't believe him.
At this point, I would say we keep the questions for another time, and this time is right now, another one.
And Moriar, your other two questions, both the answers, no and no.
Oh, sorry, Morari. Okay, Cleeks, this will be the last question.
Okay, the last question, really.
The question is, make indecipherable cawing of an enthusiastic tone.
What? That clip will be separated and arranged as a ringtone for your pleasure.
Blood of Life ringtones.
Oh, God.
Okay. Okay, one more, but that's three, the last one.
Oh, my God, Fleeks.
No, this has been three one mores. The one more is...
No, one more.
Would you rather?
All right, go for
okay.
it, Core.
Go for it, Core.
I actually didn't have one in the pocket. I was just trying to wrap this up.
Would you rather be a griffin that cannot sing or a pigeon that cannot fly?
I mean, griffins. I love pigeons. I kind of like. I don't want to say anything wrong, but I kind of like griffins, and it's a hard decision.
Would I rather be Storm, or would I rather be a flightless pigeon? Would I rather be Storm? Would I rather be a flightless pigeon?
I think I would rather be.
I'd rather be a flightless pigeon.
Oh, you asshole! You fucking asshole! What about you, Fleeks?
Why not both? Well, I would like to be a voiceless pigeon griffin.
Voiceless, flightless? Flightless pigeon.
No. Not the flightless part. I would like to be a griffin, but I want to input the pigeon thing, and I do not have the need to be able to sing. I already can sing pretty good.
Okay, yeah. Then. Well.
I take the griffin, but I want to be a pigeon griffin.
Thank you so much for joining us. And remember, always be beeping.
Always be beeping.
Keep on beeping, my friends. We're here for you.
Mannequin sort of looking things in these cages. One was hello.
Hello.
Sorry, my stack of cans.
Hey, who didn't see that coming?
Oh my god! Woo! God, I love you, Fleeks.
That was good. That was good. That.
Next question comes from Tinos Acosta. Question is, what's the strangest moment?
It's Teanos. I asked.
Teanos. Okay.
Teanos.
Not Teanos. Not. Don't call him that.
Teanos. You are so.
Teanos.
I don't know what's happening here.
What's the strange? Okay, the bird. God damn it, Fleeks. The bird in question asked.
Ha ha.